Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. Man, somebody stole hour number one. I didn't even catch where it went. But hour number two is already upon us here on Hump Day. Glad you are with us. And we're going to switch gears. So number two of the Triple Dipper for the day, I just called it storm relief because there's so much in the news right now. We're watching Florida is bracing for impact. I am pleased to say, though, that it does appear Milton has dropped to a Cat 3. That doesn't mean anything. Cat 3 is still 125-mile-per-hour winds. But it's still going to be catastrophic as it hits somewhere in the neighborhood of Tampa, Clearwater, somewhere in that area. But the bottom line is pray for Florida. But let's not forget what's already been happening. What, a week, 10 days ago, we had Hurricane Helene that swept up through Florida, and no one ever saw something like this where the most devastation appears to be in the Carolinas. Go figure. Devastation along the path, but then it just hunkered down over the mountains of western North Carolina, east Tennessee, places that I love like Asheville, North Carolina. And the devastation has been unbelievable. What has also been unbelievable, though, has been the response of just good folks. People who decide to stand up and say, you know what, I can help with that. I can do a thing. I can go there. And there's all kinds of folks. Samaritan's Purse is one of my favorite groups. And then Church of the Highlands, which is my church here in the state of Alabama, they are huge. They're already up there and working. We're up there on like day three. End result is that there are, yes, there's FEMA, and yes, there's questions about FEMA's response, and yes, there's U.S. troops and all that's necessary. But there's also been citizens that have shown up daily on behalf of their, you know, state-to-state neighbors. Two of them are sitting right here in studio right now. So I got two guys in studio with me right now who, believe it or not, own their own DC-3 aircraft, and they decided to fly supplies to North Carolina several times. So I've got Andrew Richardson and Trey Pearman sitting in the Right Side studio. How you guys doing?
Good, Phil. How about you?
I'm good.
Doing wonderful, Phil. Thank you.
Absolutely. Appreciate you. All right. So first of all, I got to ask, you got a DC-3? How did you just go out and buy a DC-3?
Well, we had a bad lapse of judgment one day and decided to go buy an 80-year-old airplane.
Yeah, no doubt. But it's obviously fully functional because you've been using it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Great, best piece of equipment on the planet for sure.
Well, okay, so a DC-3 is not like something you run down to the local used airplane lot and buy, but is this a business? What's the deal?
For the most part, pleasure craft for sure. We had a guy, a buddy, call me one day and said, you know, knew that I was in the radial engine world. I've got a C-45, Beechcraft C-45, that's a 1942 model. So I'm real familiar with the old military aircraft. And one day he said, hey, I know where there's a fantastic buy on a DC-3. Technically, it's a C-47, so it was a military designation.
Oh, yeah.
And then converted DC-3 for civilian use. So I said, well, I was having to fly to Knoxville one day for business, and the plane was up in Cincinnati, so I figured I'd just quick hop over to Cincinnati. It was only, you know, maybe an hour flight over there. So went to go look at it. Had bird's nest and you know, stuck everywhere. You know, it was pretty nasty at the time, but decided it would be worthwhile to get it back up to speed and back in the air. So we went...
Did you actually fly it home, I assume, or did you have to dismantle it and bring it back?
No. We had to work on it for about 3 or 4 days to get it running, clear all the bird's nest out, make sure everything, landing gear still worked, a lot of test runs on the ground, and then flew it back day before Thanksgiving, about 3 years ago, mm-hmm. I believe it was.
Is a C-47, was a military designation, was it a Caribou? Is that what it was, or is it...
Dakota.
Dakota, that's right, mm-hmm. Yeah. Did it have a ramp on the back? Or is it all side entry, like low?
All side entry.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, all right. So you guys, obviously you're into airplanes. You're both pilots, am I correct?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Both commercial pilots. Yes, sir.
Okay. But this is not your full-time gig, flying, right? I mean, you've got other things you do, I assume.
Correct. Yes,
all right,
sir.
So what do you do otherwise?
So I am a real estate developer, also own J.P. King Auction Company, where we sell luxury properties around the globe.
Yeah.
And then Andrew here.
I do earthwork and underground utilities and ADA sidewalk compliance for apartment complexes.
And yet you have a DC-3.
That's right.
All right. Well, listen, you guys have an aircraft, and I assume you house it at what, Gadsden Airport? Is that where it is?
Correct. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of folks don't realize Gadsden Airport's rated for almost any aircraft in the world. You can land a C-5 out there.
That's right.
I've jumped out there a bunch. I used to be with 20th Group, and we jumped out there all the time. So it's a certified drop zone. It's a landing field for major aircraft, and apparently it's housing your aircraft. Is it hangared or is it sitting out under the sun?
There's not a hangar big enough.
I didn't think so. So. I was trying to picture.
That's right. Yeah, the wingspan is 95 feet, and so I think the largest hangar door might be 80.
I think that there's one over there that it would fit in, but like you have like an inch on each side trying to push it through.
All right, so most people like get into the idea of toys and they buy like a 68 Mustang, or you know, somebody gets a side by side or a four wheeler and they're like, woohoo, I got a toy. No, you guys went and bought a DC-3. That's very cool, and I'm loving it. But let me ask you this: did you buy it with the intent to use it for relief, like taking supplies to hurricane sites, or did that just happen? And I'm going to get into that in more detail in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. That just happened.
Okay.
Initial use for the airplane, we were just wanting to resurrect something that somebody left derelict at an airfield in Ohio. So they had actually used the aircraft probably for 30 years for an organization called RAM, Remote Area Medical, out of Knoxville, where they flew it to Haiti, also around the states, doing medical relief work, medical missions work.
All right.
The man by the name of Stan Brock was the captain of the aircraft and started the organization, Remote Area Medical. And so he was a pretty influential.
Did wonderful things.
Yeah, did a lot of great things around the planet. So.
Well, I saw a picture of your aircraft, and I don't know if it's still that way, but you still have Remote Area on the side of it. Is that right?
Okay. Yes, sir.
And have you had to do, I mean, how much restoration work have you had to do besides getting it cleaned up? Is it like in?
Very little. Everything was pretty well ready to go. With aircraft like that, the more you use things, they start to limber back up and work again. So we had to get in there and grease and, you know.
I feel that way about myself.
That's right.
I get up in the morning and start moving and things start loosening up finally.
But it sits there for 6 months. Unbelievable how many things leak and
want to
act up a little bit, so.
Well, all right. So you guys, Hurricane Helene hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you were probably seeing the devastation like the rest of us on the news or wherever. And then somewhere along the line, which one of y'all got the idea to fly stuff up there?
It was actually another pilot. We've got a group text amongst how many of us is there? Six or seven in that text? Mm-hmm. And one of them sent a text
Sunday morning
and said, I was sitting in Sunday school at the time, and he sent the text and said, hey, I talked to Trey, and Trey said, let's see if we can load up the DC-3 and take some supplies to North Carolina. Who wants to help? Well,
next thing you know, hands are being raised everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Wait, how many guys first had to go, hey, honey, do you care if I go? How many conversations had to happen like that?
Well, I was a little skeptical that we could get enough supplies in order to fill a DC-3. So Andrew says, well, when are we going to go? And I said, when the bird's full. When we've got it full of supplies, then we'll go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was full by Sunday afternoon.
No kidding.
We had 6,000 pounds of cargo by Sunday afternoon.
I go to Southside Baptist Church.
Right.
And I met the pastor 5 minutes before service started and told him our idea. And he's like, okay, I'll make an announcement at church.
Now, is that Scott Hassel or is this the other church? There's two Baptist churches at Southside.
This is Southside.
This is the other one.
Scott Hassel's at Southside First Baptist.
Gotcha.
So this is the one on 77.
Gotcha.
And our pastor's David Little.
Gotcha.
And
I know David.
I talked with David and I said, David, we've got this idea. And he goes, okay, I'll make the announcement. He makes the announcement, and we open the church back up at 2 o'clock for donations, and by 6 o'clock, we already had a plane and a half load of donations.
What? Now, okay, that's, first of all, that's America right there.
Yeah.
That is. But what kind of stuff are we talking about?
Everything from bottled water to pet food to hygiene, baby formula, diapers,
wipes, yeah, all that.
You name it.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, believe it or not, we're already at the first break, but I think we've laid the foundation. We come back from this break, though. What I want to do is I want to get in the nitty-gritty. Like, you guys got stuff, but then you have to still know where to go with it. Mm-hmm. Then you have to get on the ground, and then you have the adventure of trying to get back and then maybe reload and go again. So we're going to hear all about it when we get back, all right?
Great. Okay.
All right, we're on Right Side Radio. I'm sitting in studio right now with just a couple of guys that got busy with some friends and decided, you know what, let's fly our personally owned DC-3 up to North Carolina and take stuff. I'm going to tell you right now, y'all, that is America. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, I'm back in studio right now with Trey Pearman, Andrew Richardson. I almost said Robertson. It's Richardson. Sorry about that. Well, all right, so, fellas, you guys got a plane. You guys got friends. You got churches that got busy. And I said it half jokingly, but really serious. This is just classic America right here. And you're out of pocket, I guess, all this, right? The fuel, the plane, everything is all completely out of pocket. Am I right in saying that?
Well, we started out it didn't matter what we figured all of that'd take care of itself. And so we hit the road and just made it work. And, you know, but there's been such a huge outpouring of not only our community, but I talked to a lady in Houston the other day that wanted to donate and cover a little bit of fuel for one reason or another. So we've covered our fuel bill. We've covered transportation costs. A lot of people volunteered to transport 18-wheeler trailers for us.
Yeah.
And so we've, you know, not only has it just been our community, but it's reached all the way to Texas, that people that have seen what we've been doing and it felt for the people of Helene's Path.
Well, so let me ask you this. So part of my military background was in disaster preparedness and, you know, and evacuation of noncombatants in a war zone and all that. So I kind of get the idea that a lot of times they have to have central command so that you don't have things just rushing in and people dropping stuff off and you don't even know what's there. So I'm assuming that there is command and control. FEMA is usually the incident commander on the ground. National Guard plays in. All those things happen. But you guys are coming in from Alabama. How did you know who to even talk to or where to go? Because it's not like there's a big phone network that's still up and running up there at the time when you were doing this.
Yeah, that's what's difficult. Most of the cell phones were down,
yeah,
you know, across the region for sure. And so Andrew got on the phone and got in touch with a lot of people.
The first load we carried to Asheville, North Carolina, that was kind of a learning experience. We really didn't have a good contact, but we got up there and they're like, well, these people are helping distribute. And we're like, well, great, just send it to them. That'll be good. The second load, I was in contact with Avery County EMA, and they told us where we could go,
okay,
and who to get it to.
Okay.
And that was distributing.
So basically you had to get on the ground the first time and face-to-face with people in order to be able to come back a second and third time. Is that what you're saying? Kind of know where
not,
to go?
Not really. In between that, we went on
Tuesday
to Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay.
And then Wednesday we went to Banner Elk. And when we went to Banner Elk, I had made that contact when we got back that Tuesday night.
Is there a ground control? I mean, it's saying, you know, like air traffic controllers guiding you in, or are you just going to a regional airstrip and hoping there's nobody's parked on the tarmac?
Well, at Asheville was it was a controlled airspace,
okay,
and so there was approach and tower and ground control.
Okay,
it still took us probably 20 to 25 minutes to get out. I had some friends that came out of Georgia that later in the day, and they waited an hour and a half to get out.
Oh, wow.
There was so much congestion at that airport because that was the biggest airport,
right,
in the region. So by default, people were going and taking supplies there. So it was really inundated with aircraft traffic.
All right, so you got the first load, like Sunday afternoon, you already had your first load and a half ready to roll, but apparently supplies kept coming in. So what next? I mean, you came back and decided to keep going for a while, so how more supplies kept showing up at the church or what?
Yeah, the church became kind of our central donation point, and just kind of made sense. We had volunteers there to help accept donations, and they were on board with helping as well. So it was a great partnership as far as the receiving donations, and then we had kind of handled logistically getting the donations to the people.
Wow. All right. So flight one, Asheville. Flight two, you said, was to
Banner Elk,
and then flight three went to where?
Aiken, South Carolina.
Aiken, South Carolina. Okay. When you got on the ground, what was the reception?
At Asheville, forklift delivery, very commercialized experience. The FBO knew where we're coming. They had a forklift. We're probably one of the largest aircraft that was there. So they unloaded us pretty quick. We got out of there. Completely different experience going into Banner Elk. Very mountainous terrain. The airport was located in the valley, so we actually flew. We were looking for the airport. Very hard to find.
Wow.
We were over the top of it almost before we found it.
These are all daylight conditions, though.
Daylight, yeah. VFR conditions.
Yeah.
So we had to circle the mountain and come back for a second approach because you're approaching the airport at a 45-degree angle. Later we find out that people are mentioning maybe you need a Mountaineer pilots, people that are real familiar with the area, and we're going, we can't even find the airport because you can't see it until you're literally there on top of it. So the second approach, we went in, it was nail-biting. We rolled all the way to the end. I might have clipped a tree or two. No, I'm kidding. On the ground, they said, this is definitely the largest airplane's ever been here. Ever been there.
Even better conditions, the biggest airplane's ever been there.
Yeah.
We couldn't pull off the runway. We had to park on the runway. And while we were there, you know, Operation Airdrop organization out of North Carolina. Well, out of Houston, maybe?
Yeah, they're actually out of Texas, but they were operating out of, what was it, Statesville and
Hickory,
I think.
Probably had 13 general aviation small aircraft flying in land. So we had to wait for all those guys to unload. We helped them unload before we could get out of there and clear it out. So.
All right. When we get back, what I want to talk about, we're about to take a break right now, fellas. When we get back from this one, I want to kind of go into the coordinating elements. Did you see or interact with FEMA or any other NGOs that were on the ground? Who did you see? Who did you talk to? But I also want to hear what citizens. And then there's a lot of talk about airspace, drones being an issue. Now we got National Guard helicopters. And so I'd love to get your perspective on the discussion about having to close certain things from the airspace or even control the airspace differently than what was doing at first. All right, we're in studio with a couple of real deal Americans, right side ruffians, who get out there and just fly their plane to where it's needed. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. You guys sitting here, I'm sitting here in studio with Trey Pierman and Andrew Richardson, and they have been flying supplies back and forth to North Carolina a bit, and it's got me kind of jazzed, to be honest with you, and apparently my audience is too. We got a text line sitting over here. You guys probably can't see it where you're sitting, but there's people that are live texting to the show constantly, and Kevin from Hartsel says you guys are like Red Dawn. So maybe you need to go ahead and paint that on the side of the bird. Just call it Red Dawn. But anyway, I need to ask you, though. So there's been a lot of talk about whether FEMA's got their act together, whether NGOs are carrying the bulk of the weight. But I also know that NGOs, non-governmental organizations, are huge in every circumstance. Who'd you see? What kind of response did you get from various aid organizations or from the government? And was it efficient? Was it still kind of get its feet under it? What'd you see?
You know, we had got word that in Asheville that they had a C-5 delivery, C-17, pretty large delivery of supplies through the military. It was gone. What was that? We dropped Tuesday and it came back in Wednesday, I think is what it was. Mm-hmm. But anyway, really, really big, heavy military presence in Asheville. Chinooks, Rangers, you know, all rotor equipment to be able to go in and sit down in some of those areas. Banner Elk, two Coast Guards, helicopters.
Wow, Coast Guard.
Those weren't Coast Guard, were they? I think they were just painted red and white. I think they were just helicopters painted red and white.
But they were doing
I didn't see no Coast Guard emblems on them. But.
Okay.
We flew over a lot of helicopters that were doing gas line inspections to make sure that their gas lines haven't ruptured or landslides over their gas lines. So those guys were out there. We got a lot of those up on ADSB while we were flying around.
Was the airspace, was it congested? I mean, I heard at one point that either DOT or maybe even FEMA itself was calling for a shutdown of drones and that kind of stuff, and saying no fly zones were in effect. And did you see any of that?
When we flew through Asheville's airspace, there was a TFR over Asheville for
TFR.
Temporary flight restriction
okay.
for presidential movement.
Okay.
So that was when they were coming in. As you know, it's not that big of a deal. You just have to be in radio communication with ATC during the process and squawking a code.
Any trouble with did you feel like anybody didn't have their act together, or was it all being roughly coordinated as best you could see?
The airdrop operations, Operation Airdrop, the organization, I'm not real sure if they had everything, their act together for sure. Seemed like, again, just a bunch of general aviation pilots. They weren't commercial pilots. I think that really they should have shut down and restricted a lot of the airspace because it was extremely congested.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, what about folks on the ground? Did you see any displaced civilians? Did you talk to locals? Did you get a chance to interact with them much at all? I know you're kind of on the ground offloading and going again, but did you get a chance to interact with folks up there at all?
Once we got into Banner Elk and Aiken, South Carolina, that's who helped us unload the airplanes. We had to hand unload all the supplies. And so when you're unloading a pickup truck's one thing, but we had 6,500, 7,000 pounds worth of supplies we had to unload. So it was quite a task. So they, Banner Elk, it was all locals. And so we got a lot of good feedback of what they needed. And so they're writing on a dry erase board, taking a picture of it, posting it on Facebook with a date on it, and that's their needs of the day.
How about that?
Yeah. But they were...
That's ingenuity right there.
But there was nobody there other than general aviation pilots. And, you know, that's who was supplying that Banner Elk area. And then Aiken as well, the South Carolina, they said, we feel like we've been forgotten. In Georgia, we've heard the same comments. Florida's getting a lot of federal attention. North Carolina's getting a lot of federal attention. But there was a lot of damage between the two up through Georgia and South Carolina that there's zero assistance.
Isn't Aiken right across from Augusta area?
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an unknown area, but so they were feeling like they were kind of like getting – second fiddle, huh?
Correct.
Yeah. The association we're dealing with over there, my contact is through the South Carolina Baptist Coalition.
Yeah.
And she's the director of missions for the South Carolina Baptist Coalition.
Yeah.
And so she reached out to her, and I asked her where the best place or where the most help was needed in the area for them. And she said Aiken was just like nobody was helping there. And they had a tremendous amount of damage. And so that was the reason Aiken was our third location.
Now you guys got the aerial view as you flew in. I mean, I can remember when tornadoes came through. I used to be in the state Senate, and I got a chance to go up with my sheriff's department and just fly over some of the devastation of the 2011 tornadoes to see. And you can see storm track from the air. It's pretty amazing to see. I don't know what it's like in a hurricane, but could you see the storm damage from the air as you were flying in?
Me being the pilot, I was focused on the mission. But a lot of my passengers,
good answer.
That's right. A lot of the passengers got a really good video, really good pictures of bridges that were still standing in the middle of the river, but the road on both sides of it was completely gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't that the bridge ever got washed out. And we saw that in several occasions.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge was still standing. May have been piled up with logs or whatever, but the water ate its way around the bridge on both ends, and so the roads are just gone.
Wow. Well, what's next? I mean, you guys have made three trips. You got any more trips planned? What are you thinking?
Well, so we've got some more supplies coming in, and we actually sent a truck today to Aiken again.
Okay.
That will be the third load. We've sent one truck, one plane, and then now another truck to Aiken. And I've reached out to the Florida director of missions in Florida with the Baptist ministry and let them know what we have available. And if we are needed to bring air support to Tampa, you know, let them know we're there and ready and available.
And we sent, what, 40,000 pounds of supplies to Katy, Georgia?
Kite, Georgia. Kite. Yeah, it was probably at least 40,000.
Wow.
Probably close. Yeah, probably right at 40,000 pounds on that 18-wheeler.
I have never done anything on this show where I didn't have some of my listeners want to know how they could help. And so if somebody's out there listening right now and says, well, man, I'll drop supplies off at whatever your spot is. Are you collecting supplies? Can people drop things off? And if so, what would you want them to, and how would it do?
So Southside Baptist is still, at the moment, our drop center.
And for those who don't know out there listening, that's Southside, which is the name of the actual community, and it's in Etowah County, northeast Alabama. Okay.
So they're our drop center at the moment.
All right.
And then so they're palletizing. And who helped out the other day help palletizing? Athletic Association. So we've had a lot of volunteers outside of the church that have also different community groups that have assisted in palletizing things.
Are you asking people to contribute monetarily, or do you want them to drop off stuff? How do y'all work that?
Whatever's best for the individual, we're good with any and all.
Okay. What kind of things are you looking for?
The top few items for sure is any kind of baby supply items. Wow. Diapers, wipes, formula, so on and so forth. You know, we've seen the needs transition from, you know, they really don't need bottled water anymore.
Okay.
Even though, you know, we've just got tons of bottled water.
Not as much. That seems to be what they get overwhelmed with initially is bottled water. That seems to be the initial, hey, we got to get them water,
And I would bet, too, some of the military units that are now there have they have the ability to make potable water and to clean things and to provide the huge trailers of water and that kind of stuff, too.
And it's transitioning to coats, blankets, sleeping bags, you know, more long-term needs.
Okay, so if folks want to contribute, they can contact Southside Baptist Church and say, I'm bringing stuff by. What time are you open, or how do they do it?
I think this coming week, we're going to be there tomorrow from 8:30 till 6 or 7.
Wow.
Okay. And then Sunday, we're going to be there from 2 to 6 Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then Monday through Thursday this week from 8:30 to, I think it's I want to say it's 6, but it may be 7.
And then bottom line is, I guess you're watching the weather to see what's needed and where you got to go, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, you guys are doing amazing stuff. I mean, and what's cool for me is that not only are you doing this, but you're doing this from right here in my town. So, thank you, first of all, for being willing, and being ready and able. And thank you for just, you know, sitting there and texting with your buddies and going, yeah, man, let's do it. Because that's how the best stuff sometimes starts, is just a group of guys going, hey, let's do it.
Well, and we're such a small part. There's been dozens and dozens of people that have volunteered their time and supplies and money and to help out for the overall need and cause. And so, you know, it's hands and feet of Jesus, you know, is the way we look at it.
Absolutely. So. Well, that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly what you are.
Yeah, and it's like I was talking to the pastor earlier, and I told him, I said, you know, sometimes the best things are spontaneous, because if we had really sat back and thought this through, it would not have happened.
Yeah. Well,
we would have talked ourselves out of it.
That's exactly right. And I tell folks on this show all the time, too, that the reality is sometimes it's just a matter of getting up and getting busy and having that calling, that moment. And it may be a moment in time. This may not be your life's calling to do this. You may not start the next Samaritan's Purse, but then again, you're here for now. And so anyway, bottom line is, on behalf of thousands and thousands of the Right Side Radio listeners, thank you very much for what you're doing. All right, JP, we're going to take that break right now and say goodbye to our guests. But listen, this is America. Who was it said it? Kevin Hartzell. Y'all are Red Dawn. That's just cool. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.